Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Hi, I'm Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to another episode of Alcohol Free Life podcast. It's been a great week. I've had a really good couple of days this week. At the beginning of the week, we did our self-care for the Sober Curious event. It was so good. Lots of new people turned up that I, you know, hadn't connected with before. It's great, actually, how people find us. Some were podcast listeners, which is brilliant. I just love meeting people who have listened to the podcast, and it just makes it all worthwhile. And others have just found us by kind of looking around on Eventbrite and seeing what was available for a night out in London. So it was great. We had Neil from Morning Gloryville as guest, and Joe DeRosa from Quantum Sobriety did a fabulous meditation for us, and Neil gave away tickets to Morning Gloryville's. I had one very happy winner. And we discussed all kinds of things, from ceremonial grade cacao, which Joe DeRosa gave some away, along with her book, to the benefits of mindfulness and meditation. But really in a very realistic way, because, you know, I'm well aware that it isn't for everyone. And you might have never considered all of that. We did discuss how, for some people, when this, you even think about meditation, you just think, oh, I'm going to have to sit there cross-legged for, you know, a full 30 minutes or an hour. And of course, what actually happens is our mind's so active that we just kind of tick off the shopping list while we're sitting there, which used to happen to me all the time. And actually, Joe DeRosa has got a really good tip, which is very, very simple. And it is literally just start with 5 minutes, you know, have some kind of guided visualization to start with. And there are lots available, everything from, you know, Joe's meditations and visualizations through to Headspace app and many others, and start really small and just do 5 minutes, because, you know, just actually giving yourself 5 minutes is a great start. So the event was really great. So thank you again to everyone who was involved, whether hosting one of our healers. We had a great sound healing and yoga and bits and bobs, and thanks again to the charity and to everyone involved. And our next one, importantly, big date for your diary, is July 22nd. We always said we were going to do a Stay Dry Till July campaign, so we thought in July we'd have a bit of a party. So it's going to be slightly more of a party vibe. I'm sure we'll have a couple of speakers pop up, because we always do, and it's really nice to have that motivation. But we'll also have live music and a bit more in the way of vegan nibbles and lots of choice of drinks. So it'd be fantastic to see you. It is free, and it's July the 22nd. So look on Eventbrite. I think we've got the link up there. But it's self-care for the sober curious, and it would just be fantastic to see some of you there if you can make it to London on a Monday night. The Instagram is at Janie Lee Grace, so you can usually find details of the events there. And then on Wednesday, I was part of the Alcohol Change UK conference. I mean, I can't even begin to think a couple of years ago that I would be involved in something like that, other than as a hired presenter. But it was absolutely great to be involved. Such a diversity, a diverse range of people speaking and leading workshops. And I was I hosted and kind of chaired the afternoon session. And it was just really, really inspiring. One of the speakers that I introduced was Professor Dame Teresa Marteau. She's from the Behavioural and Health Research Unit at the University of Cambridge. And she gave a really interesting presentation about how we change behaviour. Particularly around, obviously, alcohol and diet and drugs, without trying to tell you all of her presentation, which of course I wouldn't be able to do, her basic premise is that we have to change the environment. You can't sort of convince people just to change their mind by telling them alcohol is really, really bad, therefore give it up. We need to change the environment, and of course that needs to be done in many different ways. So it was a fascinating presentation, I really appreciated that. And the second speaker that I introduced was Dr. John Holmes, again from the Sheffield Alcohol Research Group. And again, his thing was talking about minimum pricing of alcohol units and how that impacts. And of course, this week, there's been much in the news about the minimum pricing, the fact that in Scotland, what they're now saying is that this has worked. They did put a minimum pricing on alcohol units, and it has absolutely had an impact on the number of people reporting with illness related to alcohol and misuse. So that's interesting. It'd be interesting to see where that goes with regard to the government in the UK. So it's been an interesting week, and it's been largely filled with talking about alcohol, which my week seems to be now. Oh, and I'm a guest, by the way, on the podcast this week. Instead of asking the questions, I was answering the questions. So I'm a guest on the 1 Year No Beer podcast. So listen to that if you get a chance, just sharing bits of my story and hopefully some of the positive things that I've found myself with Rory from 1 Year No Beer. And I'm going to return the favour, and I'm going to interview Andy from 1 Year No Beer on this podcast. So that will be coming soon as well. They do some great work, great community. They do a lot around fitness and getting people to do sort of fitness challenges, people who've never, hardly ever got off the sofa before. So they do some really great stuff as well. There's so much going on in this arena at the moment. It's fantastic. To that end, by the way, thank you so much for everyone who answered my little shout out last week. I did ask you about the words, about the phrases around all of this. And I was saying that when I first, knew that I needed to give up drinking, I found the word sober really, really difficult. The word sobriety, they didn't somehow fit. I felt I couldn't use them, which is why I chose alcohol-free as the title for the podcast. But over time, I wasn't sure whether it's just that my view had changed because I'm now obviously fully entrenched in it all, or whether there generally has been so much more, in the community, if you like, so many more people speaking about this. There's been so much more use of the word generically that it's become okay. And your response was absolutely underlining that. I had lots of replies, so I really appreciate it. Thank you for those who took the time to drop me an email or send me a message saying, yes, I don't have any problem with the word sober, with the word sobriety. I'm cool. I'm free from this, and that's all that matters. So that's great. It's really helpful, helpful for me, because I'm preparing for my TEDxEd talk in July. So it's really, really useful for me to hear that stuff. I better get to my guests, hadn't I? So we have not one but two guests this week. I've always said that I love to be able to interview people who are listening to the podcast. So we have a podcast listener, an amazing story to share in his own right. And also, I'm going to be interviewing Lauren from We Love Lucid. Now, I've mentioned Lauren's work before because she runs these, they look like amazing breaks. I can't wait to go on one in Andalusia, primarily. And so that's an opportunity to hear about how you can travel as a sober person and not have to be pressurized into the whole drinking thing, which so often comes along with holidays. So I'm going to be speaking with Lauren from We Love Lucid. But first off, I hope you'll love his story. It brings we talk a lot about Ireland and its link with drinking, very much a kind of drinking culture. So this is Pat. On Instagram, he calls himself Patchwork Recovery, which is a great name. So enjoy the interview.
So just tell us a bit about your story then, Pat, because I know you've got quite a presence across Instagram as Patchwork Recovery. I'm sure there's a story behind that name. Tell me what happened for you then.
Well, basically, I stopped drinking about 14 months ago. So it's kind of, I'm 44, so, and I'm married with three children. So it just kind of was a bit progressive for me. And I suppose a huge change in the last 14 months. So probably the reason why did I want to contact you about coming on the podcast was, I suppose, a number of reasons. One is I came across you on Instagram, and I started listening to your podcast, and forgive me, but I didn't, obviously I'm based in Ireland, so I don't know a huge amount about the work you do in the UK, but sure. I was listening to you, and I just thought, this is exactly the same as me. And, you know, a lot of the same themes just kept coming up, like self-care. And I suppose I really liked the fact, you know, the caliber of your guests and the fact that there wasn't one right or wrong way to get sober. It was sort of, you know, how you get there is a different story. It's just deciding to stop is the main thing. Mm-hmm. So I really love that about your podcast. But I suppose going back to myself is that obviously I've been sober, as I said, for 14 months. And in those 14 months, I've just learned so much. And then I just thought, you know what, you know, when I started off 14 months ago, I was kind of after waking up after a blackout in the spare bedroom in trouble again.
Yeah.
And just decided, you know, enough is enough. Now, I'd been there many, many times before. And just that time, it just changed for me. And as I said, in the last 14 months, everything has changed. And I think that message is almost too important to be kept just to me. So hence the reason that I've kind of, I like to do the podcast and, you know, share a lot of my thoughts on social media and things like that. And I think, you know, there's definitely a huge change when it comes to the whole mindful drinking and just the conversation around drinking. Because I know when I first sort of decided to get sober, there wasn't, I just didn't know where to start. I just, all I had was, I know I'm going to stop, but how I was going to do it, I had absolutely no real idea. And, you know, that's kind of just, I know that take it day by day, but it really was that. I mean, and it just started small, and I've learned so much along those 14 months. And I think that's really important. What you do as well is sharing those resources, which is massively helpful.
Yeah. I mean, just to back up, just for a second. I mean, I think, you know, it is relevant that you're in Ireland. I mean, we do think of you guys as big old drinkers, don't we?
And
I don't know how fast things are moving there, but, you know, you say that you didn't, you know, you really didn't know where to turn. I mean, interestingly enough, neither did I, and which seems bizarre because now I'm in this kind of movement, if you like. Obviously, I see stuff everywhere, but even for me, you know, sort of a year and a half ago, the options felt like, oh, well, you know, there's this thing called AA, which if you've had a dramatic rock bottom might seem the right place for you. And then there's nothing, you know. So but what's it like in Ireland? You know, what's it like in Dublin? I mean, I know it's changing now. So I saw just recently you've got a dry bar pop up, which looks
very cool.
But 14 months ago, you know, when you sort of came on the scene, as it were, what went through your mind in terms of what the possibilities might be?
Well, I think it's really interesting because a lot of information around recovery is US based, and there seems to be a huge amount more resources and openness there. But I think, and that's why I really like, you know, the Ireland and England scenario, in the sense that we're very similar culturally. It's ingrained in our culture. And for me, I know this sounds ridiculous, but, you know, it really does make a lot of sense when you look back. It's very hard to know that you have a problem drinking in either Ireland or England because it's so normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been to places like Italy where they'll put a cap back on a bottle of beer when they haven't even finished it, and going, this is ridiculous. And that's kind of the difference. And that's what took me a long time to realize that, hang on, do I actually really have a problem here? And there's still, to this day, there's people around me trying to convince me that I didn't, you know. And I think that's huge. I think Ireland's still very slow. In some ways, I think we're progressing. We have the sober bar, things like that. But even recently, I've come across two scenarios where I thought we were making progress, and then suddenly we're not. I was in a conversation with somebody, and they were talking about somebody who had a drink problem. And it's funny because we will think it's a bit of a laugh, but if someone has a drink problem, we kind of take a sip out of our drink and kind of talk out of the side, like, they have a drink problem.
Yeah.
They don't even, there's not a realization that it's such a big problem. It's like, I'll drink away in the corner and not even ever look at my own drinking. But very much everybody in Ireland knows someone who has an alcohol problem, be it an aunt or an uncle or a friend or whatever it might be. Whereas I think it's much wider than that. And I don't think there's just people that are in the corner that are labeled alcoholics and everyone else. I think that, and that's really what you're talking about, is that gray area.
Yeah, huge. Totally. That spectrum of drinking. Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing that I've realized in the last while is I've immersed myself in a lot of podcasts, in a lot of the sober literature, a lot of the online stuff. And sometimes I think we can convince ourselves that the movement is bigger than it actually is. And then when you're talking to people that aren't involved, they really are clueless as well, a little bit.
So that's true.
So I'm trying to balance that myself and kind of going, yeah, the sober part is great things happening, but in other areas, I don't see huge changes either. So I think there's an awful lot of people out there now. It's 14 months is a very short period of time, but I think there's an awful lot of people probably waking up over across Ireland in the same place I was 14 months ago. And that's why I really want to try and help them fast track.
Absolutely. So what did you do that worked for you then? You said you didn't really know where to start. What did you consider and what ended up being the most beneficial kind of tools that you came across?
Well, what was really interesting was, like, and I think it comes across again, is I'd like to think myself as a relatively clever person, and I just couldn't work out why I couldn't stop this.
I was the same. I was exactly the same. It's bizarre, isn't it? It is bizarre.
And you're like, I know. I absolutely know this is ridiculous, and I know where this is going to end. I sat down with counsellors. I remember going to counselling, and then on the way home, getting a drink, which is kind of bizarre. I sat down with a doctor who looked me straight in the face and goes, Pat, you have to stop. There is no end. Like, this is the end. You just have to stop. And went, yeah, I know. And I went drank again. And I won't say I was oblivious to it, but I knew what I heard what they were saying, but I wasn't listening. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. It absolutely does.
And I think that was just the point of, I just wasn't ready to give up. And then suddenly within me one day, I just went, no, I need to give up for me. And there was a lot, obviously my world was kind of crashing around me in lots of different things. And that's one of the things with alcohol. It affects every part of your life, not immediately, but slowly but surely everything, work, family, friends, you name it. It all started to suck, you know. Drive down. So then one day I just decided enough was enough. I'd had an awful lot of rock bottoms, crazy stuff that had happened, but it still didn't stop me drinking. But then suddenly one day I said, you know what? I got to the stage where the straw that broke the camel's back. And it wasn't a huge big issue that day, but it was. I was just tired of it. I said, enough. And for me, then I woke up that, you know, it was a Monday morning. I had to go to work. I was hungover. My dinner was still in the microwave. I was in the doghouse in many respects. And I just said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do something. So I suppose for me, the big thing is probably a bit like yourself. I didn't want to sit there and say there's nothing I can do. I'm powerless over this. And in some ways I was powerless, but I think the big change for me was that I said, no, there has to be a solution to this. And what I started doing was reading. I started educating myself about alcohol. Mm-hmm. I read like books like This Naked Mind, Alcohol Explained, and suddenly there was these huge aha moments. There really was when I got into it. Mm-hmm. And even now when I look back, people are still talking about the same things and they don't have those aha moments. And I think that whole thing about your subconscious mind controlling your drinking, because I knew on the face of it I had to stop drinking, but I wouldn't stop. But it was suddenly when I got into the sort of subconscious and started going, what is all this about, that it seemed to make a huge amount of sense to me. And then suddenly, I did small things. Just, I suppose, my biggest problem was I was a people pleaser. And even that word sounds so nice, but it's not, in the sense that I had an awful lot of stress in my life. I started off as a normal drinker and, you know, I became an adult, shall we say, with all the family, all the bits and pieces that go with that. I had an awful lot of different sort of crises in my life. But the drinking got heavier and I started to lean more on it when I was stressed and when things were getting tough. And then before I knew it, and that's the magic of the trick of alcohol, I got addicted to it. And that was the big, big thing for me. I didn't realize it was very slowly. And then kind of I woke up in my 30s kind of going, I have a real problem with this.
Yeah.
So the sort of tools I started to do, I started to put myself first. That was probably the main thing. I didn't beat myself up. I decided I was doing this for me. I didn't make any big announcements that I was going to get sober and make big promises. I just started to do things. I started to explore different things. I knew there had to be a way out, a solution. And it wasn't a case, I wasn't powerless. So really small steps, as in just, I remember a couple of the best things I've heard is like, just do the next right thing. And don't be worrying, because I mean, when we get sober first, is that we're worrying about what we're going to tell our friends, what's going to happen. Like, we have a million problems that we're trying to solve in an hour or even less. And go, no, just today, the main thing was to get through the first day, to get through the week, to stop drinking, check through the weekend. And then I stopped worrying about things further down the line. What was I going to tell my friends? What was I going to tell my family? Forget all that. Just get through the week. And really slowly but surely, I had a series of firsts, like the first weekend without alcohol. And I survived it. And I learned a little bit from that. And just little things. And somebody else mentioned recently that, you know, inches and seconds, and really that makes a huge amount of sense. Is the huge journey towards sobriety and keeping it up is, you know, it's a long journey, but it's made up of small tiny little steps. And with each step I got stronger, and I just kind of, you know, I kept learning little things about myself. And it's funny, and I know you've mentioned as well, Catherine Gray, she's fantastic.
I love that book.
Unexpected joys, and they were millions of little unexpected joys, and that's really for me. Every week, every day, I learn something a little bit different. But I had to get sober to realize those things.
When
you're drinking, you cannot see them. You just cannot see them. But as we kind of, there was so many little wins, not massive big wins, little wins. Maybe it's getting through a Friday night drinking, not drinking. Maybe it's going socially to some work event and not drinking. They were massive. You know,
absolutely. So, I know on the over the, you know, the kind of time that I've been doing this work, I've interviewed lots of women and lots of mums, you know. So there's this whole mummy culture around wine, as you're well aware, you know, for the you know, mummy's little helper and all of that. But I haven't. I'm interested to know, you know, from a guy's perspective, what the kind of, I don't know, expectations are, because you know, just like the mummy messages are everywhere in our society, I'm guessing there's this culture for guys to sort of go to the pub after work. And I don't know, if you're in Ireland, you're probably meant to go and have your Guinness, aren't you? Or is that too stereotyped now?
No,
So how did you navigate all of that? And, you know, what would be your sort of tips and recommendations for guys listening to this, you know, because I think it's really important to include guys. You know, there's always a lot of self-care stuff for women, but there isn't always as much out there for men. And I think men often sort of think they have to do this on their own.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely, you've really hit the nail on the head. I think, first of all, I think this whole kind of lifestyles have changed. I mean, my wife is a professional, has quite a high-powered career as well, and the traditional roles at home have changed. I mean, there is a lot more sharing. There's a lot more two parents parenting. And I mean, I'll be honest, I suffered from the mammy culture, except it was the daddy culture. And it was that. And I mean, I remember stupidly drinking through tiredness, as in, I know I'm going to be exhausted, I'm absolutely shattered, but I'm going to have a drink now. And I knew it was going to make me worse, but I did it anyway, because I said, I'm still going to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning, so it doesn't really matter. And that was for me, because I had two children. I had one child with colic as well. So that's really where it ramped up. I know these are small things, but that's really what happened. And I remember my wife was pregnant, and this, I can trace it back, where she came home and was asleep by sort of 8 p.m. in the evenings. And I remember we used to share a bottle of wine. And then what happened is she kept falling asleep and I drank the full bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And then she was asleep and I was on my own and went, well, the bottle's finished, I'll have a beer. I'll have two beers. And that went on for a number of months, practically a year. And then obviously the children came along, and then I wasn't sleeping and I was up. It's a long night. And that's really where my drinking really ramped up, really ramped up. And I mean, I remember one stage, this ridiculous scenario, and you know, you remember these little things, but I went into a supermarket, and I probably the same in the UK, can you buy a drink before a certain time in the morning?
Oh yeah, anytime. Yeah,
okay. Well, we can't buy before 10:30 on a weekday for whatever reason. And I went in, and I'd been up all night, and I went shopping, and I went to pay for the wine, and it was too early. And she said, sorry, there's another 5 minutes before you can buy it.
Wow.
And I wasn't embarrassed. I went, I'll wait. And yeah. It was a ridiculous thing. I actually waited until I can actually buy it and bring it home. And to me, still thinking back on, God, that was mad, you know, because I was thinking, you know, it's 10:30 in the morning. I wasn't going to drink it then, but I still needed it. And I was going to wait, and I didn't care who was in the line behind me. I was going to get that.
Yeah.
So I think... Do you know, I think there's definitely, and probably the male voice is really important too in terms of being able, that's probably why you want to share the story. Because there is a lot more women sharing their stories than men. And I know my heart and soul. We all think we're unique when this first happens, but I know I'm not alone. And I mean, being sober, I can see a lot more of it now than I ever saw before. And like, you do kind of spot people that have an issue, and you know, I'm not an expert by any means, but there are certain telltale signs, and because it takes one to know one. And I know the signs because I've done a lot, you know, everything. I love the story of people going, oh, you won't believe what I've done. But online, when people share a story, there's at least 10 people have done the same and worse.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a very positive thing in the sense of I'm not alone. I've done crazy stuff. Other people have done crazy stuff. And that's a really empowering thing when people find they're not alone. And realistically, I think for me, I think a lot of the current solutions like 12-step programs, etc., are very much negative and quite negative and not very pessimistic in outlook. Whereas I love what you do. It's very positive. I love Catherine Gray and people like that. They're very positive and energetic about it, going, yeah, it can be joyful too. It doesn't have to be all misery. Mm. And I think if we can get that message out there, I think that would be really, really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, what would you sort of recommend to, you know, well, anyone, but particularly if there are any guys listening and they're in that situation of thinking, oh, my goodness, how am I going to navigate this needing to go to the pub after work thing? What would your kind of top tips be?
Well, interestingly enough, again, everyone's different. And that's why the whole patchwork recovery thing is that, you know, everyone is different, so why should there be one solution that fixes everyone?
All right. Oh, that's where the name comes from. Lovely.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
The little bits and pieces. Like, for some people, the term alcoholic works really well for them because once they know they're an alcoholic, that means they can't drink anymore and they're happy with that. Mm. For me, I don't like it. Personally, I don't like it. It doesn't work for me. I don't feel that label works for me. But I'm not going to knock someone who it works for. Mm. And that's where that patchwork comes from. So I suppose number one, I would be saying that, look, find your own way. That does not mean it's very cool to knock AA in particular. I'm just picking that out because people just knock it all the time. Fair enough if you want to knock it, but you need to find something else. So if that doesn't work for you, don't sit on your hands and do nothing. You need to move to something else. And that's what patchwork recovery is about. I suppose in terms of the pub thing, for me, what I did was I avoided it for the first while. Mm-hmm. In the sense that I needed to get my headspace clear. I needed to feel comfortable myself. Yeah. And I did that for a while. And then I slowly started reintroducing myself to the social scene because otherwise, that's what's called white knuckling, where you're doing nothing. You're just, you know, it's like holding your breath. Eventually, you're going to have to breathe. Mm. That's not addressing the situation. So I said, well, I can't lock myself in for forever. And I have to say, I was amazed. A couple of times, I started small. I always had an excuse in terms of if I needed to leave the bar and wanted to leave, I just had an excuse there and I left. Even things like bringing the car. I'm not recommending that for everyone, but for certain people is that, look, I have the car means I have an excuse I'm not drinking. And then after a while, like even things like the non-alcoholic beers are really handy. And eventually, like I've been through, you mentioned Guinness recently. I was actually at the Guinness storehouse for a 7-hour drinking session one day recently and not drink. For me, that was a huge win for me that I managed to do. And of course, it was a free bar as well, just to top it all off. But time has changed. And like, I think one of the key things I would say to people is, look, you will make mistakes, but you need to go home and learn and say, right, I've really found that pub difficult tonight. What do I need to do the next time? Mm. And the next time it gets easier. And I think every time we do something and we with a little win, the next time you go back, it's easier. I didn't tell everyone that I wasn't drinking, and I've been like, one of my big wins for me was going to a Christmas party and not drinking. Now I didn't want to announce that I wasn't drinking, not that I was ashamed of it, but it's just a case of I just didn't need the hassle, you know.
So
what I did was I actually had a glass of wine, I had it with me, and I didn't drink it, and every time no one topped it up because it never went down. And nobody noticed.
After a while, they don't care, do they? They're only interested in their own drinks.
And it's very hard. You know that, and I know that, but to tell other people, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And you know what? I didn't make a big announcement to my friends, but now I am. I will. And it won't be a big announcement because a year later, I'm confident in what I'm doing. If I had said to my friends after 2 weeks, I'm off drink forever, they go, we'll just stop. Yeah. Do you know? Whereas if someone says, oh, they're serious, they've done that for a year, they must be serious. Do you know? Yeah.
And how has it affected you as a husband and a father then?
It's massive. I mean, I suppose one thing I always say, and I love saying this, is my wife doesn't understand me, right? Classic line. But realistically, she doesn't. She doesn't know what it's like. She would be a normal drinker.
Yeah. And I'm exactly the same. My husband is exactly the same. He has an off switch. So he used to just constantly say to me, why can't you just have one?
Yeah.
He didn't have that voice in his head that I had.
And it took me a long time to realize that. You know, and I was getting a bit annoyed because, of course, you know, you're getting talked to about your drinking and that I needed to do something. I need to address it and I need to do this and I need to do that. And I'm like, you don't understand. And, you know, and I think one of the key things is that I was accused of being selfish, right, by lots of different people for my drinking, when in fact I felt like out of control in that sense and I really didn't enjoy it. So I felt it was like a double whammy, like being labeled selfish on top of it all. But I think what happened with the relationship is that it's got so much better. It really has. And I think one of the things is that I've come to realize that my wife doesn't understand, and how can she? And that's fair enough.
Yeah.
That's why I have you. I have others like you that I can talk to and, you know, fire off an email to, and they get it. That's a big thing. But also, by knowing that you get it, I also need to realize that others don't get it.
Yeah.
That's another realization. And that's okay.
That's very true. Yeah.
That's okay too. But I think then things just got so much better. I think one of the other things is, in a relationship, if you're drinking, you're constantly in the wrong. So you can never win an argument. It doesn't matter what's happening. So it'll always come back to the point about the drinking. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that's like my confidence has come back and I can hold my own. And I think that's a huge thing, is that it brings back balance into a relationship,
which
I think is really important. And that was something I never knew. I never thought about. And it's only come back in the last while. The other thing is just energy. I mean, I think biggest advantages of it is that this thing of a functioning alcoholic is hilarious. It's just rubbish. It's absolutely rubbish, because everyone thinks they are until they stop and they go,
well, that's right. You really don't realize when you're in it, do you? I mean, you really do not realize what a ridiculous amount of time you waste, you know, thinking about drinking, buying the booze, actually drinking, recovering from drinking. It's exhausting.
And I mean, you know, it really is. And I think sometimes we are superheroes, the fact that we did manage while still going. We do that when we were drinking. I think the energy that we come back with is unbelievable. I think of like I was talking to someone recently and I was saying, I said, like, watch out for somebody in recovery, because my God, they come back. They come back with power. And it's like, you know, the other thing is like your emotions come back. And I know that sounds a bit, but for me, you know, life is still, people go, life's wonderful. And you're, no, there's still stuff that goes on all the time.
Yeah.
I'm in a very stressful situation at home, a family issue at the moment with, anyway, won't get into that. But the point is, I'm extremely stressed.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people were very worried about me going, Pat, is this going to set you over the edge? Mm. And to be honest, I went, oh God, no.
Yeah.
I couldn't deal with this, knowing what it's like being sober, to go back and say, oh, imagine what it would be like to be drinking now. I just couldn't do that.
Again,
they didn't understand that, but I certainly understood it. And I just think the energy to do things and just get up in the morning and get stuff done, it's incredible. And just being in better form to do stuff with my children, to have a bit more time with them. And the time is a massive thing between hangovers, between all the bits and pieces you mentioned something, and and two people mentioned it recently. One was that you decluttering.
Yeah.
It's a weird one, but you know, putting off those little jobs that annoy you.
Yeah.
And then when you're hungover, they're 50 times worse. Mm. It's like, you know, when you're hungover and you can't find the remote control, it's the end of the world. But doing those little jobs for half an hour in an evening, means that I've now more time to do things. For example, getting the kids' lunches ready. I get that done at night. And that my whole day is in a much better start the next day because it's done. I didn't know that's tiny, but when I was drinking, I'd have just put that off. I'll do that in the morning. And little things make a huge difference. Like the energy, I think, is the big thing. And also, I think of, with all this wasted space, what do you do? And I suppose if you had said to me 14 months ago, would I be on a podcast talking about this? No, but 14 months later, I'm absolutely delighted that I kind of am in the sense of, you know, it's their personal goals and things like that, you know. And I think one of the other things is that your emotions come back and the sense of your confidence come back. I didn't realize my confidence was hurt, but it kind of was. And it was in everything. It was in business. It was everywhere. It's pure because you're kind of keeping your head down, hoping nobody notices that you're not 100%. And I didn't realize that I was going around like that for a long time, a couple of years. Yeah. And now that I'm sober, people don't really know what it is, but they know that my confidence is back, you know. Yeah. And I remember getting angry with somebody in work. And it was funny. I was so excited. I was so delighted that I really called them out and something and head off them. And there was like, and I remember saying it online, and they were like, do you need to go to anger management? I went, no, it's just they deserved it. But the point was, my emotions had come back and I was now confident enough to call someone out when they needed to be called out. And for me, that was hugely empowering. And again, those little unexpected joys that really kind of came back, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So do you find then, Pat, that people, you know, I don't know, work colleagues or friends actually kind of maybe ask your advice now? Or do you think that will happen at some point in the future? Are you kind of, you know, because I'm just imagining that after this time has elapsed and people will have seen changes in you, you know, however subtle, that, you know, you might be called upon to share the joys of sobriety.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think a couple of things is compassion. I think we really become a lot more compassionate when we've been through it ourselves. And it's not necessarily for someone who's suffering from alcohol. It can be anything in life. But I just think I have a lot more compassion for people. I really feel that. But I also, you know, I'm just a lot more in tune to it. And I think they will. I think they definitely will. I think one of the things is that you don't necessarily want to be going around, you know, trying to fix everyone. That's not what it's about. But if someone needs help, and that's what I'd love to do here, I really want to maybe try and launch something. There's a huge amount of initiatives in the UK that isn't really here at the moment. But I'd love to sort of have an open door kind of thing where people can find me if they want and at least start the conversation with somebody who understands them. Now, I don't have all the answers. And, you know, part of it is I don't have all the answers. But, you know, let's find them together is kind of my attitude, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's so many people sitting out in different places across the country that could really be helping each other out. And I've met some great people as well that I, you know, we would never cross paths in our normal lives. And it's just amazing. And I think in some ways, you know, having gone through the struggle that I've gone through, I'm kind of happy it happened.
Yeah.
I know in a weird sense, people listening go, what the hell? But it's true. I mean, I've learned a lot about myself and I've changed a lot in 14 months, which I probably haven't done any growth like change like that in 10, 15 years. And it's amazing, you know?
Yeah, amazing. So when you're, I mean, this is a question I don't think I've actually asked anybody before, but how old are your children, Pat?
They're 10, 8 and 5.
Right. So you've got a way to go then. But, you know, when they do come to this age then, when the, you know, drink starts to loom, how are you going to navigate that? Because it's an interesting one. You know, I think you may have heard me say on the podcast, I was at an event at my daughter's school not long ago, and it was kind of one of these alcohol awareness events. And I thought this would be very interesting. And literally the conversation was based around, you know, should we give them a little bit of wine with a meal to get them used to it? I mean, for God's sake, you know, you would not be giving them a little bit of heroin. But how do we navigate this as parents? I mean, I've got no idea what the answer is, because you sure as hell can't go steaming in and say, don't you ever try a sip of alcohol, how very dare you, because it's not going to work, is it?
No, absolutely not. And definitely given my children, they certainly don't listen to me in that sense. It's an interesting question. I've kind of thought a little bit about it. I suppose, first of all, drink would have been something that was, you know, quite common in my family growing up. I know my mother and father drank quite a bit. And there is this whole thing of, you know, is it something that's inherited,
yeah,
or it's genetic? Now, I don't know the answer, but I think potentially, first of all, I think it may be some role to play in it, maybe 5 or 10%. Someone said they loaded the gun, but you shot it. And it's kind of a little bit of that feeling about it. I think for me, what it is, I think you learn a lot from people's behavior. And looking back, because I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I know I learned a lot about stress coping mechanisms from my parents and what they did. Their go-to was alcohol. Mm. And that definitely had an impact on me. And also the wider family. What do you do when something bad happens? You drink. What happens when something good is? You drink. And that's what you learn. I think learned behavior is massive. And, you know, even with my kids at this age, sometimes they do stuff and I can see myself and them going, you totally learned that from me, or a phrase or whatever it might be. And so we're teaching our children when it necessary, because we're providing a huge example. And thankfully, that's something that, you know, the kids are too young, I think, hopefully, I think, not to sort of experience the brunt of my drinking, but they know I don't drink. You know, it's not a big deal at the moment, but, you know, that's not an example I'm showing them. Mm. But I think when they get to that age, I think I'll tell them what I've learned. I don't know if this is 100% true or not. This is my belief on it. Is I think everyone in society can potentially be an alcoholic or have a problem with alcohol if the conditions are right. Mm. I think, you know, but it's about being mindful of that. I can't say, like, my wife still drinks, so we couldn't turn around and go, absolutely, you never drink at all. I grew up kind of drinking from an early age, so I know it's ridiculous to think you're never going to drink. I know the pressure they're under. What I want to do is educate them to at least make a mindful decision and to maybe think about different ways in which, you know, like, drinking to numb problems is not a solution.
Yeah.
But I want to try and show them, give them an example, but give them the facts and really teach them that it's not just a certain percentage of society that will have a problem with alcohol and everyone else is fine. It's not like that. It's like anybody can, because it's an addictive substance. If you give it enough, if you keep going at it long enough, it will happen. Mm. It's not a case if, it's a case of when. And that's what I would really be teaching them. I wouldn't be encouraging it. I don't like promoting, for example, Christmas is, you know, should we totally associate with drinking? Mm. Parties should be totally associated with drinking. But at the same time, I don't want to make it this thing that is so kind of amazing or, you know, adults only kind of, because that kind of increases people's interest in it. But I'm also hopeful that I think society may change a little bit by the time they're kind of in the next 5, 6, 7 years, that hopefully it's probably not as big an issue as it was maybe when we were growing up.
Very true.
I also think that, you know you've had the boy who drank too much, sober sister society, is it?
The sober millennials and you talk about Millie.
They're amazing.
I know it's incredible the work they're doing with young people. It's brilliant, isn't it?
When I'm talking to people that are younger than me, I kind of push them towards them.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
I think, look, they can relate more to them. And I think it's amazing. Like, there's nobody barely in my generation that's talking like this, not to mind in you know, their 18 to 20s or whatever it is. I think it's amazing. And that's something I would be definitely hoping that it improves as time goes by.
Yeah, yeah. So if I were to talk to you in a year's time then, Pat, what would you sort of hope might have happened? Maybe, you know, for you, you know, personally with the work that you're doing or just in your locality, in your, you know, in your world, as it were.
Well, I suppose in the last couple of months, and I think you've a lot to do with this, to be fair, and I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to you, but I'm really been inspired by the people that you have on, and just the fact that they've sort of, I won't say come from nothing, but no massive backgrounds, just decided to do something about it. Yeah. And, you know, I suppose at the moment I'm starting to look at writing a book about it. A bit of a ways towards it. But that's definitely a goal that I want to do. I want to sort of give a book, and I think possibly a written book more than something online, because I think sometimes online is so easy that if you get a written book, you kind of have to pay a bit more attention to it and there's a bit more effort that goes into it. That's what I found. Mm. And then the other thing is I'm going to start looking to do sort of coaching. I'm going to do get some qualifications in that field, with a view to kind of looking at the whole idea of sober coaching or something along those lines. And as I said to you, probably making more connections in Ireland. And again, this podcast would be great for that kind of thing. But just in terms of maybe, you know, building relationships with organizations in the UK and maybe spilling over into Ireland and see if we can do some sort of events here. There's this sort of, the little shoots are there in terms of, you know, as at that bar, there's sober meetups and things like that. They're quite small at the moment, but I suppose my background is a little bit of event management, is a little bit of this kind of PR, etc. So there's definitely, we can get the word out there and start to grow it and just really kind of make a difference, you know. And that's really what my game is for the next year. I mean, my first year was to get sober and sort myself out, but also to be confident that, this is going to stick. Now, nobody knows what's going to happen, but, you know, at this moment, I'm very confident and that it is going to stick. And just doing that as well will also keep me on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well.
It is good to get involved in other stuff to keep yourself accountable, isn't it? And that's excellent. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, I love it. And I love the name. It really sums up, you know, as you say, all these little bits and pieces that come together. It's very rarely one thing that gets us to where we are.
We're all different, and it's different things for different people. Because I say one thing, but, oh, I'd never do that. And it's like, well, that's because you're different and that works for you. And that's great. It's great. And I hate seeing people knock other people's. Look, if it works for you, we don't care. You know, how you get there is not really anybody's business. It's your own.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's fantastic to chat to you. I love the work you're doing. If you set something up in Dublin, please invite me over. I'd love to go. Any excuse. That'd be great. Cool.
And likewise, if there's anything in the UK that people want to maybe start looking at here, we can definitely have a chat and see where it goes.
Cool. Well, it's great to talk to you. Thanks a lot. And thanks for all the work you're doing. And we look forward to interviewing you about your book when that's out. That'd be very cool, wouldn't it?
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Pat. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Pat. And as promised, Lauren from We Love Lucid.
If you are sober and you would still like to go on holiday, who doesn't? Then you really need to know about We Love Lucid. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Janie. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, I love the idea of what you do. I can't wait to come on one of these holidays. Good, because you organise these fantastic things that, you know, it's a mix of adventure and fun and all the rest of it. Obviously aimed at people who are sober, but also often aimed at solo travellers, which is another very unoccupied market. You know, there's not very many people doing that kind of thing well. But before we talk about the holidays and the kinds of things you offer, let's just find out a bit about you. I know that you're originally from Northern Ireland, you were living in Edinburgh. So what took you to Spain and what's your kind of story around drinking?
Well, Janie, I was living and working in South Korea for about 3 years there, from 2015 until 2018. I was teaching out there. And in 2016, there came a point where basically sort of my drinking and partying, it just, you know, it wasn't conducive anymore to the life that I wanted to lead and to the life that I had been wanting to lead for some time. And I finally hit the nail on the head and I gave it up and I quit for good. So that was 2016. Since then, there have been so many positive changes in my life, and creating We Love Lucid has been one of them. I suppose when I was in Korea, I was thinking, right, you know, what is my next step? I want to do something I'm really passionate about. And that's how this all came about. I mean, I love travel. I love experiencing authentic culture, you know, getting to really experience, you know, go somewhere and not just the sort of touristy type things that you see quite often. So that was the whole basis for this, and also because I don't drink, and I realized there was a real lack of activities and things to do for people like myself that don't drink. And so that's how it came about.
It is an issue, isn't it? Because, you know, you hear a lot of people talking about when they've given up drinking, actually their first holiday can be a real you know, real stressful event, and people are worried about it. Maybe they've booked onto something all inclusive and they know there's going to be booze everywhere, or or maybe they're just booked to go away with friends. And in so many cases, the whole holiday is actually based around drinking. I mean, is that what you found when you sort of first started to think about this? You know, did you do a bit of research into what was out there in terms of, you know, what is on offer for people who don't want to drink?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny you mention that, because the very night that I decided to quit, although I didn't realize, to be honest, that I was going to give up forever, because, you know, at that time, if you think about it in its entirety, it can be a bit overwhelming. So I thought, right, I'm going to give up, try and give up for a week. And I was about to head off on a trip, on a sort of organized trip to one of the islands in Korea. And so I did notice that there were very few other people there that weren't drinking. I had, at that stage, I did start to look into what was available for people that don't drink. And there really are very few sort of things similar to what I'm doing. There's a couple of people doing it, but nothing sort of, I suppose what I want to do is bring a really sort of fresh vibe to this. And
well, I mean, so I think there is quite a bit in the kind of retreat space, isn't there? There's a lot going on in terms of, if you just want to go and do a wellness break, then fortunately there are some great things on offer there, you know, whether in the UK, there's places like Inner Guidance in the UK, which is a wonderful, wonderful retreat if you want to just go and stock up on meditation and yoga and great vegan food. But your thing is different, because it's an actual holiday. They're actual holidays you put on. So we are talking proper travel and adventure and fun. So give us an example then. Well, tell us where you're based and give us an example of some of the trips that you offer.
It's a good thing you pointed that out, actually. So just before I tell you about the trips, you're right, it's not a retreat. And, you know, even though those things are, you know, really great and can really help people a lot, and I am actually interested in a lot of those activities, my sort of focus and what I'm good at is putting together a package with outdoor activities, getting people into nature. So that's what I'm focusing on, where my skills lie. So basically, I'll give you an idea coming up in June, in our June trip and some of the other trips as well. We've got a full moon kayaking trip. So in some of the months, I've been able to coincide the full moon with a bit of kayaking on this beautiful lake. I mean, I'm not sure if any of the listeners have been to Ronda or heard of Ronda, but it's just absolutely beautiful. It's sort of situated on top of this cliff mountain with a beautiful gorge, and it's surrounded by mountains and greenery. The air is fresh. And so that was one of my sort of main objectives with these trips, to get people outside trying new things, you know, so at the end of the trip they actually feel invigorated instead of, you know, feeling like they need a new holiday.
Yeah, that's so important, isn't it? So and what kind of people come on your holidays then? What kind of demographic do you have?
That's a good question. And at the minute, because I'm just starting out, I'm sort of seeing who's interested and who wants to come on these sorts of trips. You know, solo travelers, definitely a big thing. People who are maybe coming away on their own. This is especially useful for people who've quit drinking, and maybe their circle of friends all go on holidays and they like to drink, so they're maybe at an odds with what type of holiday to do. And that's not to say that people can't come with other people as well, but the whole idea, the main point is to get people connected, to connect with other people. So as long as people have that in mind, whether they're coming alone or coming with others, that's totally fine. And I suppose the different sort of age groups, the people that have been contacting me a lot, I suppose 30s, 40s, 50s as well, and it just depends. I suppose it's all about your mindset, really, isn't it? Even though there are a few outdoor activities, they're really for beginners, and I've done that on purpose. I wanted people to be able to try new things, so you don't have to be, you know, an experienced walker, hiker, or even kayaking is really easy to do, especially on a lake. So yeah, variety of ages. We're going to see how that goes.
Yeah, fantastic. And tell us about the trip that you have for women, because that sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. You've got things like goat's cheese making experience.
Yes.
That sounds great.
I'm really excited about that. So basically in and around Rhondda, they're really well known for this type of goat's cheese. So the goats live out in the mountains and they roam freely. And because of this, they have a really high quality, they produce a really high quality of goat's cheese. So one of the activities is where we'll go to this museum and use the old traditional tools to make the goat's cheese in a traditional way. And you also get to take away with you, probably it's quite a lot. I'm not sure how you would bring that home, but some goat's cheese. I suppose you could have it on a bit of bread, you know, throughout the rest of the holiday. Mm. So yeah, we've got that. We've also got a flamenco performance here. Rhondda's really well known for its type of authentic Spanish flamenco, so that's going to be amazing as well. I'll be giving a survival Spanish lesson.
Wow.
Yeah, so teaching is one of the things that I'm really passionate about as well. And it's not going to be in a classroom or anything like that. We're going to be upstairs in a lovely terrace with the sun shining, have a bit of fun learning a bit of Spanish at the start of the trip. So then throughout the rest of the trip, you know, if you need to ask for a coffee or ask for the bill and things like that, you'll be able to in Spanish, which is also really good for confidence building and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the accommodation like on these trips then? Does it vary? Are we talking sort of rough and ready? Is it luxury? Is it somewhere in between?
It's Janie, it's somewhere in between, and I'm really happy actually with the hotel that I've found that I'm working with. The staff are absolutely brilliant. It's really sort of cozy, colourful, bright, and all the rooms have got en suite. Everyone gets a double room, get breakfast included as well. So I would say in the middle. It's definitely not rough and ready or backpacker. That's not the sort of the type of trip this is. It's definitely very comfortable. It's not high-end luxury either. I wanted to make these trips affordable for sort of a larger sort of range of people. So that's the accommodation.
Yeah, and people fly, you would fly into Malaga, is that right?
You can actually fly into Malaga or Seville,
right.
Especially if you're near a large airport or a main airport like London. They've got daily flights to both of those.
Right.
The good thing is as well, if people wanted to add a day on at the beginning or at the end of the trip, Malaga and Seville are both beautiful cities to check out. There's loads of really nice architecture there and museums and good food, good tapas.
Great. Well, sounds amazing. Mm. And so what's your plan for the future then? How many of these kind of trips would you like to sort of set up? And do you have any intention to sort of spread this to other areas, or are you happy with with being around Rhondda? What's the plan for the future?
Oh, well, Janie, I'm actually itching to take these trips worldwide. I can't wait to get to that point. That is the idea, yes. So this year and next year, the trips are going to be based in and around Rhondda. There is a possibility next year, a high possibility that we'll do a trip in Morocco as well. But after that, I really want to do the trips, run the trips in different places across the world, so they'll be accessible to other people, not just in the UK too. And it's a bit of variety, and people can go to different places. So that's the idea. You know, I'd like to partner up with somebody who's also quite, you know, passionate about travel as I am, and do it like this, you know. But yeah, definitely, I have big plans for We Love Lucid, and as I said, I love travel and I love sussing out these really, really good activities and awesome places for people, so I'm looking forward to that.
Sure. And so what about the kind of drinks that you do offer then? Obviously there's not alcoholic drinks involved, but how is that corner of Spain for alcohol-free drinks? Are there lots of good choices?
Well, you know, this is something I found out recently. I personally don't drink alcohol-free drinks, but I have found out here in Spain they have quite a big selection, and you'd even find quite a lot of Spanish people who do drink will choose to drink an alcohol-free beer. Mm. They've also got this thing called mosto, which is like an alcohol-free wine, you could say, which I've discovered recently too. I quite like that.
Right.
And so whenever people arrive here in Rhondda for the trip, we're going to have welcome drinks on the terrace, and I'm still concocting a few ideas what to do. Maybe have some lovely gazpacho, which is a sort of tomatoey, delicious tomatoey type juice as well. People have the option of maybe smoothies and things like that. But when they're out and about, definitely there'll be, you know, alcohol-free beers and a few other options.
Mm, fantastic. What would your top tips be then for anybody who's kind of, you know, they're in the first few weeks or months of this and they haven't really decided on holiday yet? You know, do you have any kind of tips for people? Well, I mean, actually, generally, not even necessarily just planning a holiday, just that kind of thing of needing to take some time out, because, you know, a lot of us kind of beat ourselves up for a lot of time and don't really treat ourselves enough, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't stress enough the importance of connecting with people, to be honest. And although social media, it is great because it's convenient, you can, you know, log on, connect with people there, chat about things that you're going through. I really think face-to-face connection or face-to-face encounters are really, really important. And whether that is, you know, getting away on a holiday with other people or, you know, meeting people in your town, etc. I think it's really, really important when you quit. Definitely, it's something that I didn't have in Korea. And there were times when I thought I was the only person, female my age and the planet, that had quit drinking. I literally felt like that. So I think people in the UK are quite lucky in that respect, and other countries, Western countries too. But that's definitely what some advice I would give. And treat yourself. Why not? You only live once.
Well, absolutely. And also, you know, we sometimes forget that we all of us ended up spending probably more than we ever wanted to on booze, because once you've bought the first, you know, glass or bottle, you used to lose all count. And yet we don't sort of count that money and put it back into a pot to treat ourselves. maybe we need to do that, you know,
exactly,
a little bit more often. Yeah. And also, I think, you know, for a lot of people, when they first give up, one of the things that makes people feel most stressed is how will I socialize again?
Exactly.
You know, how will I be, you know, how will I have fun? Because we're led down this ridiculous illusion and bizarre kind of lie, really, that we can only have fun when it's fueled by alcohol. And you know, I think for a lot of years I genuinely had completely forgotten how to have fun. I really don't think I had any idea. So I love you know, the concept of you know, as you say, you're in the out in the moonlight, you're going kayaking, you're learning to make goat's cheese. There are things that I wouldn't have even contemplated making time for something like that, because that would take away from my time at the bar.
Exactly.
Oh, it's God, funny, it sounds terrible, doesn't it, when you say it like that?
Well, yeah, it's just funny how your perception changes, you know, because I was the same. That's how I felt. And I would have thought anybody that didn't want to go and hang out and drink wine was boring. Yeah. And now I it's completely turned around, and I can't think of anything better than going and kayaking under the full moon, or, you know, to go cooking class and things like that. Just to me, that's just ideal.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, it's great work that you're doing, and I wish you every success
with
it. I hope they continue to grow. I look forward to making one of the trips at some point. So give us your website then. Yeah, it'd be lovely. Give us your website where people can find out more information about the work you do.
Yes, our website is www.welovelucid.com, and we're also on Facebook and Instagram, We Love Lucid. So yeah, feel free to join. I've got a closed Facebook group as well there, where we talk about the trips and also possible future destinations too. Really love to hear what people think about that. Any suggestions are welcome.
Sure. Just one last question. At this point, you don't have anything for families?
I don't have anything for families, but never say never. It could, you know, you never know in the future. It is definitely a possibility. I'm keeping my options open at this point, not, but it could be a possibility in the future.
Yeah, cool. Great to talk to you, Lauren. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thanks, Janie.
Cheers.
Bye.
So thanks to both my guests, to Pat and Lauren, coming up on the podcast in the next few weeks. I've got such great guests lined up. I am so lucky. I've got a chance to bring you an interview with Jolene Park. Many people know about Jolene Park because of the amazing, excellent TED Talk, Grey Areas of Drinking. I've been quoting her forever and a day, it seems. So I'm thrilled that she has agreed to be a podcast guest. So knowledgeable, so inspirational in the work that she does. Also, I have an interview with someone else who's very versed in nutrition and, you know, the kind of stuff that's lacking when we give up drinking. With that's Fiona Robertson, who calls herself the Body Whisperer. Great name. I'm also going to bring you an interview with another, I'm still on the kind of health tip, if you like, another naturopath. We'll be doing that in a few weeks. She's a Hay House author that I had an opportunity to interview for another radio show, for my Hay House radio show as well. So we've got a lot to come. I've got an interview with Matt Black, the piano man, about kind of music in the media, which always feels very relevant. There's been lots this week about sober celebs, hasn't there? I mean, there really are so many when you start adding up the list of celebrities who are sober. It's totally inspirational. It makes you realise, well, they look so good, let's face it. It's not always just the work they've had done. Sometimes it's just that they've given up drinking. One of the things we talk about in the One Year No Beer podcast, where I'm a guest, is talk about the fact that I really do think that you get younger. You actually get younger when you give up drinking, and it's absolutely amazing. I think William said that, author of Alcohol Explained, William Porter. When I interviewed him, he said, you know, I asked him what are the benefits, and he said, well, I've lost 10 years. And yeah, it's so true. It's absolutely, just the benefits keep coming, don't they, really? Just a reminder then that our next Self-Care for the Sober Curious event is July 22nd in London. It's going to be a bit of a party with live music, so see if you can make that one. Ahead of that, next Wednesday, or depending on when you're listening to this, Wednesday 26th of June, it's not my event, but I'm hosting the evening. It's called Wonderment Wednesdays at the Arboretum Club in London. It's a private members club in London. Very cool venue, really lovely. There is a ticket price on this one, which is not down to me. You just need to kind of deal with the organiser on that. So it is on Eventbrite, and it's called Wonderment Wednesdays. And I'm hosting an event called Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew?, which is the title of my TED Talk. But we've got a kind of strap line, which is sober and social for the sober curious. So I'm going to be hosting the first part of the evening. And then in the second part of the evening, we're going to be looking at everything to do with handling relationships and the social scene and sober dating. And I'm going to be speaking with Millie from Sober Girl Society and Scott Pearson, the boy who drank too much. So it's going to be a really nice mix, you know, not just my shtick, you know, we get the kind of the young influencers and their take on it all as well. So I'm really looking forward to it. That's Wonderment Wednesdays, and it's Wednesday 26th of June. Self-care tip this week. This is a bit of a random one, but it's been on my mind because it's come up a couple of times when I've interviewed people who are nutritionists and, you know, really into optimum health and well-being. And we've discussed how tricky it can be in the early days when you're kind of craving sugar. And of course, this happens to so many of us. You know, you get your sugar head on and your body's craving that sugar that you would normally get from the alcohol. And of course, we've discussed lots of times, you know, the answer isn't absolutely go mad and eat every single pie that you can find or donut. But by the same token, you know, if you're gonna have the sugar, just at least try and make it the good stuff. And you can get high percentage cacao, and you can put a grape in the freezer. Makes a massive difference. A grape straight from the freezer tastes so much better than a grape. And things like figs and dates, they go great in the freezer as well. But anyway, I've heard a couple of naturopaths now and health experts, if you like, say that a really good tip is to have a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, really good quality, preferably organic apple cider vinegar, in some water you know, dilute it properly. And that really takes the edge off the sugar cravings. So I'm going to try that this week. Of course, that really follows on from the podcast last week where I was interviewing, I think it was last week or the week before, when I was interviewing Henry from Nonsuch Shrubs, which is sort of based on a similar kind of principle. So if you didn't hear that interview, have a listen, because it's really fascinating, the kind of the ancient drink that is the shrub. We're not talking about a bush. I told somebody about this and she said, why would you want to drink a bush? I'm not talking about that kind of shrub. So anyway, have a listen to the interview with Henry from Nonsuch Shrubs if you get a chance, and there's your self-care tip. So thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, if you want our free PDF of resources, you're very welcome. We won't bombard you with tons of emails, I promise you. You can email me, janie@janieleegrace.com to ask for that, or you can just drop me a message. It's @janieleegrace on Instagram or on Twitter, and @JanieLeeGraceLoves on Facebook. Really look forward to seeing some of you at our events. And thank you so much for listening. And I'll say again, I've said it before, if you're going through this at the moment, if you're in these early stages of that you need to reduce your drinking or quit, then give yourself a really big hug. Look after yourself. This is the time you really need the self-care, and you need to be really kind to yourself and put yourself first, because this is a big thing you're doing, and it's so worth it. I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Janie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.